Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I wanted to talk about the BV formalism. Mostly to set notation and everything, let me give a brief reminder of what the BV formalism in physics is all about. One is interested in integrals of the form. You integrate over something, e to the I h bar of x, 0 of x. You want to set this up, maybe f 0 of x dx. So maybe you're interested in an integral like this. Here x is, I'm being very vague about what x is, of course. Typically in a quantum field theory situation, it will be some huge infinite dimensional manifold. But the idea is to try to approximate it in some way. So the first observation is that if S0 is a Morse function, on a finite dimensional manifold, let's call it star. Then star has an asymptotic expansion, and the leading term is, some factor times e to the I as 0 of of the critical point. Maybe you sum over critical points. The idea of the BV formalism is to try to understand what happens in this situation where S0 is not a Morse function, or maybe even a function on an infinite dimensional manifold of some sort. The story starts with Fadeev and Popov, who did this in the gauge theory setting. So the first kind of physical example where S0 won't have isolated critical points is where you have a group action of some group, which is pretty much always. And then the critical points will be orbits for the group. And so obviously there's no hope for those to be isolated. Batalin and Velkovisky realized that this construction could be generalized. And the rough outline of how this goes is the idea of what Batalin and Velkovisky did, as I understand it, is to first embed x into a larger graded manifold. Called V and extend S0 of x and F0 of x, S0 of x to a function S of x. So you extend it on the graded manifold V. On V, now the new function might depend on H bar. On H bar. And express. So then the idea is to express this integral as an integral, over V as thought of as sitting in the odd cotangent bundle of itself, e to the I s, or maybe y. So the idea is to express it as an integral like this, so far not much has happened, but now the idea is to deform this V as a Lagrangian inside of this space. And so then deform V as a Lagrangian inside this odd cotangent bundle. And the idea is that as you deform this contour, the integral won't change. But in order for that to happen, in order for the integral to not change, So the idea is that once you deform V, then you can arrive at a kind of a Morse theory type situation. So in order for the integral to not change, S has to satisfy the quantum master equation, UME. And so this is the most, this is the thing that in practice one has to do, is find the solution of the quantum master equation. So typically people solve the quantum master equation order by order in H bar. So at H bar equals zero, so the quantum master equation becomes the classical master equations. Which is, I guess I'll write it as classical. Which is just the bracket of S classical with itself is equal to zero. Again, it's a function on some shifted cotangent bundle, so this bracket makes sense. So now what happens then is, well, typically, as I said, you typically solve it by order by order in H bar. And the first thing that one does is you solve it at the classical level. And then one constructs what's called the BRST cohomology. And the BRST cohomology is just, you know, you take this functions on T star minus 1 V, and with D, on V, and D is bracketing with, so you build a this cohomology, I had it right the first time. Okay, I wanted it like this. So one constructs this BRST cohomology, and solving the quantum master equation, this amounts to, from this point of view, once you've solved the classical master equation and gotten to the classical BRST cohomology, then this is just deformation quantization of BRST cohomology. I'll say later probably about what deformation quantization means in this setting. But the point is to arrive at this, maybe I should call it classical. So the sort of the most, maybe that's a 2, and maybe that's a 3, sorry. So the most mysterious part of this, so as I described it, the most mysterious part is starting from a function and getting to BRST cohomology, because then then you place yourself in a situation that one can understand where it's just deformation quantization in this setting. So the basic question is, well, there were a lot of choices, right? There was some auxiliary graded manifold. There was some solutions of this classical master equation, and so on. So the basic question is, to what extent does BRST cohomology depend on the choices? Right, because as constructed, this is something that looks like it very much depends on all sorts of choices. And, well, the idea, of course, is that it doesn't really depend on any choices that you make. But also, well, maybe I'll return to this. So, Felder and Kashdan studied this question. And they showed that, well, basically, if X is a finite dimensional affine variety, and S0 is a regular function, then, you know, under the condition that the BRST cohomology lives only in negative degrees, lives only in positive degrees, cohomological. Apologize. Then this BRST cohomology is uniquely determined by the manifold and the function. State that in a minute. Actually, maybe. Oops. Found there. None is if X is affine, an affine variety. Is BRST cohomology is uniquely determined by X and F, and S0 of X. I'm not going to describe their construction in much detail, but maybe I'll say a little bit about it later, but so they essentially give some axioms for what the BRST cohomology is supposed to look like, and prove that with that restriction they're the same. I guess I want to maybe I should emphasize is that even so there are kind of a few problems, a few follow-up questions that one might want to ask about this. Well, first of all, you know, this restriction about affine seems very unnatural, and we'll eliminate that shortly. But a little bit more seriously is that, in their formulation, it depends on the manifold and the function. And so that's not the kind of thing that generalizes well to the infinite dimensional setting. So what one really wants is a heuristic. And part of what I'm talking about is to try to make this heuristic precise, is that BRST cohomology should only depend on the critical locus. Of S0. So in other words, this dependence on the ambient space, there shouldn't be one. So the advantage is that now, if one can formulate it in this way, then one can access infinite dimensional situations as well, where, you know, in a lot of cases, this X is huge and infinite dimensional, but the critical locus is either finite dimensional or something manageably infinite dimensional. Yeah. Yeah, well, this V. V is something. That's the first choice you make. V is something. Second choice you make is the solution of the classical master equation. Maybe, you know, there could be more than one solution. So there's V, there's S classical. There are probably some other implicit choices.
It's worth noting that it's not in an action of gauge.
Yeah, there's no gauge group.
There's given the action, it's degenerate. Can we imagine some possible gauge symmetry in higher symmetry, which controls those?
Yeah, so there's no restriction on what kind of, so there's no like fixed gauge group that I'm, what's that?
V would have something like that in it.
I mean, typically the way, in a gauge theoretic situation, the way Fadeev and Popov, they constructed a particular V. Which involves the group, which involves the gauge group, I guess Patalin and Vilkovisky realized that there are natural constructions of V that generalize that. But at the same time, you know, one somehow wants to do this without reference to V, or at least prove that it's independent of any kind of choice of V. So Felder and Kazan proved some version of this result. On the other hand, What one really wants, again, as I said, there's a restriction that it's affine. It's not a huge problem, but would be nice to get rid of it. More seriously, one wants to show that it only depends on the critical locus. And I guess another thing is that their axiom scheme doesn't apply to all kinds of, to a lot of kinds of physical theories that one is interested in. So specifically, one of their axioms is that there's no cohomology, and BRST doesn't have cohomology in negative degrees. That's what they need to nail down a uniqueness of the solution of the classical master equation. And this is fine for their setting, but it doesn't. But it sort of breaks down any time that your original function is not on a manifold, but on like a supermanifold. Anytime you have supersymmetry in your theory, then this kind of axiomatization scheme breaks down. So I'll try to explain why that is and how one should deal with that. Is there a question? Yeah.
I want to virtually by arguing against your heuristic.
Yeah.
That I would assume that at least some version of a quantum theory knows more than just the critical logistic. It sort of knows about it, how you can tell from that. So I guess that your answer might be that the quantization is where I get to know a little bit more about the manifold than just the
Oh, well, it depends what you mean by quantization. I mean, so far, I'm just talking about a kind of deformation quantization. And so from the point of view of deformation quantization, there actually isn't much more than just the critical logs. And so let me try to explain that. If you want to put in instantons, then you might need to know more. Yeah?
Is the integration over B supposed to be equal to the integration over S?
What's that?
The integration over B.
Yeah, so I didn't describe what V is or how to build it, but that's sort of what happens.
And if I'm doing gauge theory, does X include the action of the gauge group or is it in space of gauge orbit?
Is X? Oh, no. So typically in the situation is the group acts on X. That's sort of the Fadeev Popov example. And then, well, to construct V, you sort of incorporate this action. Anyway, I don't want to talk about how to construct V, mostly because the main purpose of my talk is to avoid doing that. I guess the reason for this heuristic is that in the situation, if you're studying integrals like this, as I said, in the situation that S0 is a Morse function, then you have this kind of asymptotic expansion in terms of the critical points. And maybe to address your point, Theo, is that typically, unless you have some extra symmetry, this asymptotic expansion is really only an approximation. But this is sort of in that situation, that's the perturbative version of quantum field theory. And so in some sense, it really only depends on the critical locus. So I'm not going to say anything more about beyond the perturbative situation, not today anyway. So that's a heuristic. This is where the heuristic comes from by analogy with the Morse function case. But now Felder and Kajdan actually partly answered this question. So what they did so here's a Oh, so again, X is my affine variety. I have some function, some regular function on X. And what they looked at is they said, well, I think they were really motivated by the gauge symmetry case. So if you look at the Lie algebra, of vector fields on X annihilating this function S0, and it has a subalgebra given by the sub OX module generated by so there's sort of some trivial examples of vector fields that annihilate the action, namely these ones. So D and Tx And what they showed is that I haven't introduced this notation, but by crit, I will mean the critical locus. Yes, so this is some variety where ds0 is equal to 0. And the point is that if I take the quotient, that this forms a Lie-Reinhardt pair. So they conjectured that BRST, that the BRST cohomology of S0 is just the cohomology of this Lie-Reinhardt pair. I don't know, Lie-LR0 so this is the kind of thing that's suggested by gauge theory, I guess. And they proved it, so they proved it. They proved this in degrees 0 and 1. So this conjecture is true in degrees 0 and 1. It turns out that in general, it's not true in higher degrees. But I want to describe a version. But now I want to describe a version of this that is true in all degrees and reduces to this statement. Okay. All right. So this is a brief recap of the BV formalism and what Felder and Kashdan have to say about it. So there's a kind of another approach. I'll go over here. So another approach. Due to Kevin, I think this was first suggested by Kevin, which is to look, rather than looking at the critical locus, to look at the derived critical locus. I don't know, is that a fair attribution?
I have no idea.
I don't know, I mean.
I think I might have been the first one to use the word derived critical locus.
I see. I mean, well, the story I heard, I don't remember from whom, I think not from you, is that this came from a misunderstanding of what Felder and Kashdan was doing on your part. That kind of trying to, anyway, I don't know, maybe this is a. But anyway, is consider the derived critical locus. Of S0. So the correct statement will be, so this heuristic is going to be wrong, but the way it's going to be wrong is that really the BRST cohomology is going to depend not on the critical locus, but a slight thickening of it, which is the derived critical locus. So roughly speaking, is it solve the equation ds equals 0 up to homotopy. So what this means specifically is, well, you have your manifold X. There's a map to T star X, which is the graph of ds0. There's the zero section. And a solution, ds equals 0, is the intersection. So we can take the derived intersection, d crit 0. So functions on the derived critical locus. Well, the way this works is that this is a different commutative differential graded algebra. And it's going to have a cohomology in negative degrees. So this is, well, So it can be written like this, but more explicitly as a differential graded algebra. Well, it's a symmetric algebra over Ox, Tx shifted by 1, with a differential given by contraction with ds0. So you can see that this defines a differential graded algebra with cohomology groups in negative degrees. So roughly speaking, whatever this derived critical locus is, it's the it's a spectrum of this kind of differential graded algebras. How far to the side am I supposed to go? Can people see what's the, well, yeah, I understand, but at which point does, at which point can people not see anymore? Or, okay. All right, so this, so one can consider this. So it's sort of funny. If you compare, you can compare the cohomology here with the Beeristi cohomology. And so, well, assuming that S is generic, assuming that S is not a generic and has lots of critical, and doesn't have isolated critical points, for instance, then this will have cohomology in only negative degrees, whereas in the classical BV formalism, that has cohomology only in positive degrees. So already, if you want to relate them, something has to happen. All right. Maybe I. Okay. Well, I guess the first thing I should say is that Kevin makes a very compelling case for why this should be the object that you really want to study, rather than anything else. But now. Okay, so this one advantage of this derived critical locus. It has the structure of a minus one shifted symplectic. Derived scheme. So there are a couple of ways of seeing this. So I probably should say a few words about derived symplectic geometry. Or does everybody know all there is to know about derived symplectic geometry? Yes? No? Some? Well, no, something should be known. So let me tell. So I'll say something about it. So let me at least try to explain this fact and what it means. So there's a general theory which will be useful of shifted. The next section, I should say something about shifted symplectic structures. And maybe in this setting, I should. So in the setting that I'm going to be talking about, this was developed by Pontev, Talon, Vakier, and Vitsozzi, and Clark, and the rest of them. So this is for symplectic, this is for Poisson. So the idea is that, well, there's such a thing as a derived stack. It's probably not worth defining precisely, but in particular, so e.g., a spectrum of a commutative differential graded algebra, which only lives in negative degrees. So these are what the affine objects are, is these. And so, well, derived stack is something built out of these. So in particular, an example is a derived critical locus. So sorry for introducing this level of generality, but it will really prove useful. It's not just idle generalization. So on such a thing, So there is such a notion, and there's a notion. So there's something called the cotangent complex. So this generalizes the idea on that what on a scheme is the module of Taylor differentials. So even on a regular scheme, if you have a scheme which is not smooth, then for instance in that case the module of Taylor differentials won't be projective anymore. But there's a nice resolution of it, an extension to a DG. To a chain complex, which is called the cotangent complex. And for derived sets, that's really all one has. And there's a notion of a two form of degree n. Degree n is an element of Hn, not surprisingly. So you can just play this game with the cotangent complex instead of Taylor differentials. So this so symplectic structures is a closed two form, which is non-degenerate. So here non-degenerate will mean the same thing, but the subtlety, which is why I'm talking about this, is the notion of a closed two form. So a closed two form of degree n is an element of Hn. Well, now instead, so you take two forms, then there's a Durham differential. This goes to three forms. So in the usual world, you would say a two-form is closed if when you apply the Durham differential, it's zero. Now, in this world, things might be zero in more than one way. So you're supposed to give a homotopy of this being zero, but you're not done, because when you further compose with the Durham differential again, then this composite is zero for two different reasons. The first reason is zero for is because this was zero, and you apply the Durham differential to something that's zero. And the second reason is that the Durham differential squared is zero. And so it's the Durham differential squared of something, which is zero. But you have to identify those two reasons. So, and that amounts to, and so on. So a closed form is an element of this, truncated Durham complex. And so the point I'm trying to make is that a closed two form in the setting a closed two form is a two form. First, it's a two form, but then you have to specify additional data. They're sort of, depending on how you set it up, it's sort of infinitely. An infinite amount of extra data, so one in every degree. All right. Okay. So then, using this, one can define what a symplectic structure of degree shifted symplectic and shifted symplectic structure is, which is just. I'll go over here. So definition. PVV. Is an unshifted symplectic structure on X is a non-degenerate closed two form on X of degree n. All right. So I didn't say what non-degenerate means, but it's a property of the underlying two-form. It just means that it gives an isomorphism between the tangent complex and the cotangent complex and its dual. But anyhow, so well, there Well, so a basic example is that an ordinary, a usual symplectic variety is a zero shifted symplectic stack maybe I'll say it like this, has a zero shifted symplectic structure. So for smooth varieties, this is the same. But in general, zero-shifted symplectic structures are a bit more general than usual symplectic structures. For instance, in the presence of a, in the case of a stack, something like G bundles on something, or something like that, then it incorporates, I think, what people call a B field in symplectic geometry, or. But anyway, it can be, because of this extra data, the difference between a two-form and a closed two-form, there can be extra data. And while in Poisson geometry, these have names, and in that situation have been studied. But this is a kind of a framework that kind of unifies all of that very nicely. So non-degenerate is what it always is, which is that an element of wedge 2 of something gives a map between it and its dual. And the non-degeneracy means that it's an isomorphic. That has nothing to do with, so in particular, the closure data is irrelevant to being non-degenerate. So it's being non-degenerate is just a property of the two-form. So these guys, so the way I told you to specify one of these, it's an infinite amount of data. So how do you ever do such a thing? Well, you have theorems that tells you how to construct new examples out of old ones. For us, the main before I say that, so there's also a notion of Lagrangian. So if X is an n-shifted symplectic stack. F is a map from maybe L to X. So I want to emphasize that in this setting, Lagrangian is a property of a map. So in particular, it doesn't have to be a sub anything. Just an arbitrary map is a Lagrangian. So is Lagrangian. So Lagrangian structure on F is, well, it's two things. Well, first of all, maybe let me give it a name, this closed two form. So heuristically, it's a homotopy in A2 closed of L. So you can pull back the two form, and you're supposed to give a homotopy between it and zero in the space of two closed two forms on L. And also plus, so this just means isotropic, plus, well, I won't say it, but a Lagrangian condition. So the remaining part is actually a condition. There's no more data. It's a condition on this homotopy. You can probably imagine what it looks like. So there's a notion of a Lagrangian. And again, it's a property of a morphism. So I guess an example, if X is n-shifted, symplectic, that's equivalent to, well, you can take the map from X to point, and point has a canonical n-shifted symplectic structure for all n, because the space of forms is just zero. So you can take the point with the n plus one shifted symplectic structure, and giving X an n-shifted symplectic structure is the same as giving this map a Lagrangian structure. So that's an easy observation. Maybe that will also tell you what this Lagrangian condition is. In this case, it amounts to the non-degeneracy. All right, so the theorem is that is that if X is unshifted symplectic, L1, L2 mapping to X are Lagrangian morphisms, then their fiber product, which again is in this world of derived stacks, is n minus 1 shifted symplectic. Okay, so this is one of the theorems that PTVV proved about giving new examples of shifted symplectic structures from old ones. So in particular, a corollary is that this derived critical locus has a canonical minus one shifted symplectic structure. Again, because by definition, it was the intersection of two Lagrangians. So in a zero shifted. All right. So that's one way of saying that this has a minus one shifted symplectic structure. Okay, but another way of saying it is by symplectic structures have to do with a Poisson bracket. So O d crit of S0, this has an obvious Poisson bracket. Right, namely, if I go over here, here was a description. It's a symmetric algebra on vector fields. And so you can take the bracket of two vector fields. And so this gives a bracket of cohomological degree 1. So this makes it, which makes it into what's called a P0 algebra. Okay. So that's going to be important. So there's a notion of let's see, do I need to say anything about Poisson structures? Well, so maybe I'll say in words, running short on time. There's also a notion of a shifted Poisson structure. There's an equivalence between shifted symplectic structures and shifted Poisson structures, which are non-degenerate. And in the affine case, a minus one shifted Poisson structure is the same thing as a homotopy P0 algebra. So P0 is like the Poisson, but where the Poisson bracket has cohomological degree 1. So another reason one might care about these things is, well, I started talking about the BV formalism. So this BRST cohomology is not just a sequence of groups, but it actually has the structure of a homotopy P0 algebra. So note is that BRST cohomology, as it's constructed, G is a, well, homotopy P0 algebra. All right, maybe let me try to get to the stating the main thing I want to talk about, and then circle back as needed. So the theorem is let S0 be a regular function on a variety, on a on a smooth variety. I guess the first thing to emphasize is that I'm not assuming that anything is affine. So we have this natural map. We can take the derived critical locus. But we can also take the usual critical locus. Oh, and there's a map like this. So this is the what's called the classical truncation. Then the assertion is that this map has a unique coisotropic structure. And the BRST cohomology is given by functions on the coisotropic reduction, the derived. So this is the answer of how one can recover BRST cohomology just from something like the critical locus. So I should emphasize that the only thing that I'm using in this construction or in this statement that there's a unique coisotropic structure, it's not used the fact that this is actually the derived critical locus of anything. This is true for an arbitrary minus one shifted symplectic scheme. So this assumption of smoothness is exactly related to the fact that I assumed that my initial, that the Lagrangian, that the action in my initial theory didn't have any supersymmetry, supervariables. That's sort of related to this being smooth. So what would happen is if that were the case, all of this could make sense. The problem is that then the derived critical locus would be stacky now. And so, well, this kind of statement about having a unique isotropic structure wouldn't be true, but one can still ask for trying to find one. And then, well, one way or another, the proposal is that BRST cohomology should always be this kind of functions on the derived coisotropic reduction. All right, so let me... What's that? Well, as you can see, it only depends on the derived critical locus.
Depends on the Poisson structure there, probably.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it very much depends on the shifted symplectic structure on the derived critical locus. Yeah, but why does it? So your question was why does it only?
The descriptions of the symplectic or Poisson structure that you gave.
Yeah. Oh, well, to what extent do they depend on X? Is that the question? I mean,
yeah.
As I described it, I gave two descriptions, right? And part of the assertion was that they're the same. One, and both of them sort of involved X in the formula. In both cases, actually, I was going to point to this one, but in both cases, it's sort of easy to see that this description only depends on the formal neighborhood of the critical locus inside of X. So one way or another, the upshot really is that you should study one should study the derived critical locus together with its shifted symplectic structure. And this is the right this is the right shadow of X on the function that knows about all of these things. So this object is what's going to encapsulate all of the classical field theory.
If I unpack with direct coisotropic, I would also get some version of this object Hodge-Benz result.
Yes, I'm about to explain that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm about to say, for instance, why. So they have this L mod L0. So they have this kind of description. So I want to explain why, one thing I want to explain is why their theorem is true, how to deduce that it's true in degrees 0 and 1, and how to also see that it fails in higher degrees. All right, so one way or another, let me give some indication of what derived coisotropic reduction is. It'll be in two, first a more geometric one, and then I'll write down some formulas. So the more geometric ones, well, it's essentially a theorem that I'll write it like this, that Kevin and I proved. Kevin might not recognize it. Is that if X is an n-shifted symplectic stack, a Lagrangian structure on Y, oh, sorry, not Lagrangian, a coisotropic on Y mapping to X is the data of Z XY, another n-shifted symplectic stack, and so plus so y. So there's a map from y to x. Y is supposed to map. Is this visible? This is probably not visible. Oh, y maps to this thing I called z of xy. So the additional thing here is this map. This is what's called a nil isomorphism. I'll say something about what that means in a second. So roughly speaking, this means that whatever a derived stack is, you can evaluate it on derived rings. But the assertion here is that if you evaluate it on a regular ring without any nilpotent elements, that these don't see the difference. So it's like this is the formal, you should think of this as the formal completion of Y inside something. So now you have another thing. This is also shifted symplectic, plus a Lagrangian structure on Y mapping into X cross. So a coisotropic. So a coisotropic structure on a map is a map into another symplectic thing, such that the map into the product, together with the data of a Lagrangian structure of a map into the product. And this Z is the derived version of coisotropic reduction. So let me point out, from this point of view, this is what coisotropic reduction is. So let me point out a kind of a strange feature of coisotropic reduction in the derived setting, which I think is a bit strange, which is that this map, by the way, this is why I wanted to talk about more general stacks, is to introduce this thing. But the point is that this map the map from Y into this coisotropic reduction, well, this, by definition, is also coisotropic. Right, because, well, these two are, there's a symmetry between this quasi-tropic reduction and X. And, well, almost, except I had this condition of being a nil isomorphism. So now the question is, what is, what's the quasi-tropic reduction of this map? Any guesses? Oh, so a good guess is it's X, except that this might not be a nil isomorphism. So modulo this issue, it will be X. So the quasi-tropic reduction it is. Because you quotient, so anytime you're quotienting by a Lie algebroid, that's a nil isomorphism. I mean, there are different things you might mean by quasi-tropic reduction. Here I'm thinking at the, it's like if you have a Poisson manifold, you can try to quotient by the symplectic foliation. But what I'm doing is I'm quotienting by the algebroid rather than the groupoid. And so the quasi-tropic. Yeah, so this is the formal completion. Of y in x. Well, this is for an arbitrary map. I don't want to give the formula, but now, all right, I should wrap up. But now let me say it in more kind of, in more formulaic language. So what happens, so let me just state the theorem, which is a, which is a theorem I proved with Dennis. It's a general, Dennis Gatesquary, it's a general fact about nil isomorphisms. This has nothing to do with symplectic anything. So let f x to y be a nil isomorphism. Then tx over y is a Lie algebroid on x, and y is isomorphic. Well, there's a procedure of quotienting out by a Lie algebroid. Then y is the quotient of x by this Lie algebroid. So in particular, the functions on y, it look like this. They're the symmetric algebra for Ox of tx over y dual shifted by minus 1 and some differential. And the differential is related to this Lie algebroid structure. Okay, so anytime you have a nil isomorphism, there's an algebroid. So the point is, so let me try to finish at least by relating this construction of BRST to the algebraic description that Helder and Kashdan found, which is that, so for the upshot is that we have this map from the critical locus to the derived critical locus. And we have this haven't given this a name. The BRST space. I don't know. Let's call it Z. So this is the quasi-tropic reduction. And so what happens is that the relative tangent space of That's 0 for z. So the way this works, maybe not surprisingly, is that this is the same as the relative cotangent complex here, shifted by minus 1. L. Zero shifted by, oh boy, let me get the shift right. Shifted by minus 2. My apologies. Okay, so this is the I didn't quite tell you how to think about this quasi-tropic structure, and I guess I won't have time to, but once you unravel it, then so this is kind of a general feature. So anytime you have a quasi-tropic thing, then this relative cotangent complex has the structure of an algebraoid, and the quasi-tropic reduction is the quotient by this algebraoid. And again, the algebraic structure on this is exactly what's giving the exactly corresponds to this quasi-tropic structure. But the point is, now the observation is that, well, you can take H0 of this. This is some complex, but now it's pretty easy to see that H0 of this is equal exactly to L mod L0. This is Felder and Kasdan's L mod L0. And so, well, the point is that if you have a, and I guess the way this is set up is that this is in, this is in cohomological degrees. Less than or equal to 0. So the point is, if you have some algebraoid, you can think Lie algebra, in degrees less than or equal to 0, then the first two terms of Lie algebra cohomology only depend on H0. Or here, the Lie algebraoid cohomology only depend on H0 of the thing. So this explains why this description is correct in degrees 0 and 1. But this, in general, this has a this has infinitely many non-zero cohomology groups. What did I want to say? Yeah, I guess one thing to comment is that notice that because this lives in cohomological degrees less than or equal to 0, then when we dualize it, shifted by 1, we're only adding we're going to be adding things in positive cohomological degrees. So so it's like we're going to be starting with the critical locus and adding some things in positive cohomological degrees, and you can identify the Felder-Kasdan construction or the usual BV construction of what are these called, anti-ghosts, I think, with the generators for this complex. All right, I'm about out of time. How late does this usually go? All right. All right. Well, I was planning on an hour, but let me just give some examples. So, let me write down a few examples. Some of them were Felder and Kasdan considered, and one of them is kind of a slight variation. So first, so suppose S0 is a Morse function, or has isolated critical points more generally. So if S0 is a Morse function or has isolated critical points, well, in this case, the critical locus is the same as the derived critical locus. And therefore, this BRST, this is just functions on the critical locus. Again, because this, well, this guy vanishes. It's the full quasi-tropic thing. So um, coisotropic reduction along the identity map just gives you the same thing, and you know it's embedded diagonally as a Lagrangian. That's what sort of the big brain. So a second example. A second example is where so which I guess this the Morse function is a subexample of this. Well, suppose S0 is a Morse bot function. So the difference between this derived critical locus and the critical locus sort of measures to what extent your function doesn't have isolated critical points. But on the other hand, you know, there's a usual thing that one considers as a Morse bot function is where you have, well, it's another nice generalization. Well, then local, at least locally, the derived critical locus, well, it won't equal the critical locus anymore. That's impossible. You can check that any minus one shifted symplectic scheme has virtual dimension 0. But what will happen is that it's the odd exactly the odd cotangent bundle on the critical locus. Again, at least locally. Globally, it could be twisted. But globally, what's true is that BRST, regardless globally, is that the BRST cohomology. This is the Durham, this is going to be the Durham cohomology of the critical locus. So you can just take the ordinary. So in this Morse bot situation, what happens is that the RST cohomology is just the Durham cohomology of the ordinary critical locus. Okay, let's see. Did I want to say anything else? Oh, well, it generalizes part of the first. So a Morse function is in particular a Morse bot function. But in the case that S0 is a Morse function, then both of these are just a bunch of points. And the Durham cohomology of a bunch of points, well, is the same as regular functions on those points. What's that?
The non-standard example.
Is this a standard example, by the way? I mean, yes, but not one that I can state very cleanly. But yeah, but I mean, in general, it gives a new formula for the. I mean, you know, I haven't written this down here on the board, mostly because I've been trying to avoid saying more about homotopy Lie algebraoids than I already have, but basically it gives a formula that you can very explicitly write down the Lie algebraic structure on this guy. Well, really, and this has nothing to do with critical loci. So this is for any minus one shifted symplectic scheme. And then, well, you can that gives you a very explicit description of a BRST cohomology, which is a kind of, which I think really is a different formula than one usual for it than one usually encounters in the BV formulas. All right, I think I will stop here, but I'm happy to answer any questions and provide more details about anything. Let's declare the official part of the talk over.
I'm still confused. So the Easter minus of critical, Easter minus of points are same as
yes.
Points?
Yes. Correct, because the cotangent complex is 0. Cotangent complex of a point is 0. Just think suppose the critical locus is just one point, which is reduced. Importantly, the scheme structure is reduced. Otherwise, you can have something. So it's just points, spec k. The cotangent complex is just 0. So the any kind of cotangent bundle is going to be just this the point. Yeah.
I'm curious about the following non-standard case.
Yeah.
the critical manifold.
Uh-huh.
The critical manifold just generalize the two most part.
Yes.
Like the critical manifold.
Yeah.
Has the critical scheme has the node or cusp singularity.
Yes.
I'm just curious, like, what's happening to the singularity? You have some thought about it? Like, second case is like a.
Yeah.
It's smooth, right?
Yes, of course.
With a node or a cusp.
Yes, so I haven't thought through this example. Oh, so, I mean, there is a calculation. So one advantage of this formalism, which is how I would be tempted to compute this example, is that you could work locally on the critical manifold now. And so, you know, outside of the singularities, we know what's happening. And at the singular, so it's a question of understanding what happens at the singularity, but that's not. So that seems like that should be pretty straightforward to do. I don't have an example of. Do you have an example of such a situation? Write down what? It's not so easy to write down. So let. Actually, wait a second.
So take the,
is that even possible? That I'm not even sure this could be the critical. There are strong restrictions on what's. I suspect this is not even possible. So I would think that. My impression is that if you look at the critical manifold, the singularity it's either smooth, or the singularities are not locally cooked. Or it's not a locally complete intersection. I don't think it can be a locally complete intersection anywhere, which is. What's that? Oh, cusp. Cusp, yeah. Oh, wait, isn't that also a locally complete intersection? I haven't checked this very carefully, but my impression was that you can't get locally complete intersection singularities, is that it has to necessarily be worse than this. What about the quantum version? Well, as I said, yeah, so that's a, that's a great question. So as I said, the usual quantum BV formalism amounts, so this has the structure of a P0 algebra. So what the usual quantum BV formalism is about is deformation quantization of this thing. But see, the point is now quantization commutes with coisotropic reduction. And so what happens is you can try to quantize this guy, and then that will automatically give a quantization of this guy. So that's also the sense in which if you forget about this part. So in some sense, quantizations, this gives a kind of correspondence between quantizations of the derived critical locus and what one usually calls BV quantization. So I think this is the reason that despite Kevin's different starting point, looking at the derived critical manifold rather than something like this, you ultimately get the same quantizations on things like this. It's because they're related via this kind of reduction. I don't know. Is there something else that you're interested in about quantization? I don't know. So perhaps the upshot should be that really you should consider the derived critical locus and forget about the more classical story. That could be one upshot of what I'm saying. Oh.
I just wanted to clarify the statement of this theorem that you attribute yourself to that.
Yeah.
So Z of X, Y here, is that what you're calling the coisotropic structure?
Yeah.
And you're saying that a coisotropic structure on this map is the same thing as this space is always defined
No. So giving a diagram like this, so giving a cloisotropic structure on the map from y to x is the same as giving a diagram, another thing, and a map to y, so that that is Lagrangian. Well, the data of a Lagrangian structure on this map. So this guy doesn't exist independent of the cloisotropic structure.
Even as a space.
Even as a space, yeah. So you can play with some, let me tell you what it is approximately. As I said, you're trying to give a Lie algebraic structure on this kind of thing. There's this 2 is related to minus 1. In general, n minus 1 is the shift. So the point is, you can give you can start with the 0 algebraic structure, right? So the way you would build z x over y is you take this kind of thing with the 0 algebraic structure, which means that the bracket is 0 and the anchor map is 0.
Sorry, what is this kind of thing?
This thing. Sorry, so you take the relative cotangent complex of y over x with an appropriate shift. The shift is n minus 1, and you give it the 0 Lie algebraic structure. So you quotient by this. Alternatively, you think of it as a sheaf of abelian groups on y, and you quotient by this. This will have, so what will always be true is that this will have and then the idea is that whatever this guy is going to be a deformation of that. So that's sort of one way of, and in fact, that's how this kind of theorem is proved. You start with the 0 one where, y to x is also like it's the 0 map, for instance.
That definition is the cloisotropic structure?
Yeah, so.
So Nick, you sort of say y is a Lagrangian.
If y is a Lagrangian in x, what will this be? Yes, that's your question?
Yes.
Great question. So, let's do this example. That's related to this example. That's where this comes from. So if y in x is Lagrangian.
If y is x, is it just x?
If y is equal to x,
yes.
Then that's x, yes. But suppose y is Lagrangian. Well, here's an example. I'm supposed to give something, I'm supposed to produce something so that I'm supposed to give a symplectic thing here such that the map from y to the product is Lagrangian, right? This guy is already Lagrangian. So what is the natural thing to do is to put point here so that x cross point is still symplectic and y to x cross point is still Lagrangian. But not quite. This doesn't work because this is not a nil isomorphism. So I'm supposed to take the formal completion. There's a formal procedure which makes any map into a nil isomorphism by replacing the target called formal completion. So I'm supposed to complete point along y, which is y Durham, as Phil points out. And so the correct thing to put here is y Durham. And functions on y Durham is exactly the Durham cohomology of y. This is the explanation for this fact. Is that in this case, whether this is true locally or not, whether this is true globally or not, what you can see is that the critical locus inside the direct critical locus in the Morse-Bott situation is Lagrangian. That's that. Any other questions?